individual voices, countless individual streams of chemical information. Each stream was the recording of a mind that had entered the ocean at some point. The oldest minds, those that had entered the ocean in the deep past, were the faintest ones, but they were also the most numerous. They had begun to sound alike, the shapes of their stored personalities blurring into each other, no matter how alien they had been to start with. The minds that had been captured more recently were sharper and more variegated, like oddly shaped pebbles on a beach. Naki kenned brutal alienness, baroque architectures of mind shaped by outlandish chains of evolutionary contingency. The only thing any of them had in common was that they had all reached a certain threshold of tool-using intelligence, and had all, for one reason or another, been driven into interstellar space where they had encountered the pattern jugglers. But that was like saying the minds of sharks and leopards were alike because they had both evolved to hunt. The differences between the minds were so cosmically vast that Naki felt her own mental processes struggling to accommodate them. Even that was becoming easier. Subtly, slowly enough that from moment to moment she was not aware of it, the organisms in her skull were returning her neural connections and allowing more and more of her consciousness to seep out into the extended processing loom of the sea. She sensed the most recent arrivals. They were all human minds, each a glittering gem of distinctness. Naki sensed a great gulf in time between the earliest human mind and the last recognizably alien one. She had no idea if it was a million or a billion years, but it felt immense. At the same time, she grasped that the ocean had been desperate for newness, and that while these human minds were welcome, they were barely sufficient. The minds were snapshots, frozen in the conception of a single thought. It was like an orchestra of instruments, all sustaining a single, unique note. Perhaps there was a grindingly slow evolution in those minds. She sensed the merest subliminal hint of change. But if that was the case, it would take centuries to complete a thought, thousands of years to complete the simplest internalized statement. The newest minds might not even have come to the realization that they had been swallowed by the sea. Yet now Naki sensed a single mind flaring louder than the others. It was recent and human, and yet there was something about it that struck her as discordant. The mind was damaged, as if it had been captured imperfectly. It was disfigured, giving off squalls of hurt. It had suffered dreadfully. It was reaching out to her, craving love and affection, something to cling to in the abyssal loneliness it now knew. Images ghosted through her mind. Something was burning. Flames licked through the interstitial gaps in a great black structure. She couldn't tell if it was a building or a vast pyramidal bonfire. She heard screams and then something hysterical, which she at first took for more screaming until she realized that it was something far, far worse. It was laughter, and as the flames roared higher, consuming the mass, smothering the screams, the laughter only intensified. She thought it might be the laughter of a child. Perhaps it was her imagination, but this mind appeared more fluid than the others. Its thoughts were still slow, far slower than Naki's, but the mind appeared to have usurped more than its share of processing resources. It was stealing computational cycles from neighboring minds, freezing them into absolute stasis while it completed a single sluggish thought. The mind worried Naki. Pain and fury was boiling off it. Mina kenned it too. Naki tasted Mina's thoughts and knew that her sister was equally disturbed by the mind's presence. Then she felt the mind's attention shift, drawn to the two inquisitive minds that had just entered the sea. It became aware of both of them, quietly watchful. A moment or two passed, and then the mind slipped away, back to wherever it had come from. What was that? She felt her sister's reply. I don't know. A human mind. A conformal, I think. Someone who was swallowed by the sea. But it's gone now. No, it hasn't. It's still there, just hiding. Millions of minds have entered the sea, Naki. Thousands of conformals, perhaps, if you think of all the aliens that came before us. There are bound to be one or two bad apples. That wasn't just a bad apple. It was like touching ice, and it sensed us. It reacted to us. Didn't it? She sensed Mina's hesitation. We can't be sure. Our own perceptions of events aren't necessarily reliable. I can't even be certain we're having this conversation. I might be talking to myself. Mina, don't talk like that. I don't feel safe. Me neither. But I'm not going to let one frightening thing unnecessarily affect me. Something happened then. It was a loosening, a feeling that the ocean's grip on Naki had just relented to a significant degree. Mina and the roaring background of other minds fell away to something much more distant. It was as if Naki had just stepped out of a babbling party into a quiet adjacent room, and it was even now moving farther and farther away from the door. Her body tingled. She no longer felt the same deadening paralysis. Pearl-gray light flickered above. Without being sure whether she was doing it herself, she moved toward the surface. She was aware that she was moving away from Mina, but for now all that mattered was to escape the sea. She wanted to be as far from the mind as possible. Her head rammed through a crust of green into air. At the same moment, the juggler organisms fled her body in a convulsive rush. She thrashed stiff limbs and took in deep, panicked breaths. The transition was horrible, but it was over in a few seconds. She looked around, expecting to see the sheer walls of the lagoon, but all she saw in one direction was open waters. Naki felt panic rising again. Then she kicked herself around and saw a wavy line of bottle green that had to be the perimeter of the node, perhaps half a kilometer away from her present position. The airship was a distant silvery teardrop that appeared to be perched on the surface of the node itself. In her fear, she did not immediately think of Mina. All she wanted to do was reach the safety of the airship, to be aloft. Then she saw the raft, bobbing only 100 or 200 meters away. Somehow it had been transplanted to the open waters as well. It looked distant but reachable. She started swimming, the fear giving her strength and sense of purpose. In truth, she was still thick, well within the true boundary of the node. The water was still thick with suspended microorganisms, so it was more like swimming through cold green soup. It made each stroke harder. But by the same token, she did not have to expend much effort to stay afloat. Did she trust the pattern jugglers not to harm her? Perhaps. After all, she had not encountered their minds at all, if they even had minds. They were merely the archiving system. Blaming them for that one poisoned mind was like blaming a library for one hateful book. But it had still unnerved her profoundly. She wondered why none of the other swimmers had ever communicated their encounters with the mind. After all, she remembered it well enough now, and she was nearly out of the ocean. She might forget shortly. There were bound to be subsequent neurological effects. But under other circumstances, there would have been nothing to prevent her relating her experiences to a witness or inviolable recording system. She kept swimming and began to wonder why Mina hadn't emerged from the waters as well. Mina had been just as terrified. But Mina had also been more curious and more willing to ignore her fears. Naki had grasped the opportunity to leave the ocean when the jugglers released their grip on her. But what if Mina had elected to remain? What if Mina was still down there, still in communion with the jugglers? Naki reached the raft and hauled herself aboard, being careful not to capsize it. She saw that the raft was still largely intact. It had been moved, but not damaged, and although the ceramic sheathing was showing signs of attack, peppered here and there with scabbed green accretions, it was certainly good for another few hours. The rot-hardened control systems were still alive, and still in telemetric connection with the distant airship. Naki had crawled from the sea naked. Now she felt cold and vulnerable. She pulled an aluminized quilt from the raft's supply box and wrapped it around herself. It did not stop her from shivering, did not make her feel any less nauseous, but at least it afforded some measure of symbolic barrier against the sea. She looked around again, but there was still no sign of Mina. Naki folded aside the weatherproof control cover and tapped commands into the matrix of waterproofed keys. She waited.